You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision. And WTCM News Talk 580, welcome aboard New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is great to be here. Thank you, Ron. On Thursday, October 3rd, 2024, if you're listening to the rebroadcast on October 5th, it is a rebroadcast, of course. But if you do have questions of a financial nature, we'll do our best to give it a shot. And joining us this morning, too, is Heidi Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning, Dennis. I'm delighted to be here, and it's another beautiful day in northern Michigan. I can't believe how many we've had lately.
Yeah, it's just been one after another. We'll take the weather. And then Deanne Jennings, too. Good morning, Deanne, our Director of Operations.
Oh,
yes, sorry about that. Yes,
you're in that chair. Hello.
Good morning to everyone. I'm so happy to be here. The sun is shining, and we have an amazing special guest. I'm excited.
We do, indeed. I was thinking this morning about a couple of things before we get started. The New Retirement Radio on 20 years. And we have had a ton of positive comments from last week's show with Ed Slott. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of questions, smiled to myself as after the radio show, but oh my gosh, the comments after and in the days since. We intend we should be able to post that in a couple 3 weeks.
Absolutely.
Ed was all about the Roth conversions, yes, and the continuing changes in tax, all always helpful. But first, Before, it's going to be a bit of a longer introduction just to warn you, okay, Lindsay? So in about 2017, we had lunch with Wendy Steele, and it was about hearing about this group that she wanted to start in Traverse City called Impact 100. Now, that was a while ago. Most people would say, let's see, that's about 7 years. And I would call it a way for women to be empowered to give to charity. And 100% of those gifts go to the charities themselves because all of the work is volunteer. Now, the donation at that time was $1,000, which I think it still is. And I thought to myself, honest thought, well, that's a pretty good sum. Next, the goal was, you know, there's 100, so we call it Impact 100 for a reason. We're hoping 100 women will join us. And I thought, Traverse City, I think they might be able to achieve that. I hope they can because I love the story of what it was they'd been able to achieve already. But they've blown the doors off of Traverse City, and I wrote the word down, zenith. This is a zenith of performance from the Impact 100 group. And Lindsay, you are the president, and we are excited. I'll speak for us all.
Absolutely.
Yes,
to have
indeed.
You join us here this morning. Thank you, Lindsay Raymond, for joining us here.
Oh, thank you, Dennis. Very excited to be invited and share the amazing impact of our group.
It's incredible. So you've given, Impact 100 has given how much back into the community, the Northern Michigan community? What's the total? Do you know the total?
I do. In just 8 years, we've given over $2.4 million directly to nonprofits, 22 nonprofits to be exact, in our community.
That's amazing.
It is. So $2.4 million, and you've got some exciting future things you're working on as well. So if you would, well, back up for a minute. Sorry. Let's give it some context. Yes. What does Impact 100 do? What are its goals? What is it trying to achieve with its giving?
Yeah, well, as you so expertly outlined for your listeners already, Impact 100 is a chance for women to collectively give and make transformational impact in our communities. We are a group of all women. Each member contributes $1,000 to join, and 100% of that contribution goes back directly to nonprofits who service our neighbors in need. And our goal is to give grants that are the size intentionally to really bring transformational and sustainable change to nonprofits. So we give grants of at least $100,000 to nonprofits. That's the goal. And as you said, $1,000 is a lot. It's meant to be a stop and think gift. Impact 100, I had never personally written one check to a charity for $1,000. That just seemed, you know, I'd give monthly contributions, but that was a huge stop and think gift. And it is tough, but what it does is it shows that we're serious. We take it seriously. We want to support our neighbors in need. We want to give back to our community. And by doing that in a collective fashion, our $1,000 goes way farther than it would. My gift alone might be a drop in the bucket for a nonprofit who truly needs funds to operate. But when we all collectively organize and we give grants, like this year, our grants were $116,000 each, we truly do make change.
And Lindsay, how much of my $1,000 donation goes to the grant?
We are very proud to say 100% of that donation goes out. We are an organization that does have expenses, operational expenses. And so what we do is we ask friends of Impact, organizations, other individuals who want to give more to support us by giving a donation to our operational expenses. Those are called Friends of Impact. And our members also step up. We ask them if they want to assist to become 110%ers, because what woman in your life do you know who doesn't give 110%, right? So they give $100 extra, and we pool that to fund our needs, like our grant review software, our events that we put on. There's a lot of that that people don't really understand goes into it, but we do very proudly say that 100% of that contribution goes back. We don't get paid.
That's awesome. And Heidi Cartwright, our own Heidi Cartwright, reviews financials and grant candidates. You're part of the application process as well.
Right. I'm on the finance committee. I started on that my first year. I started with the first year of Impact, as Wendy Steele asked me on the air, am I joining? And I said, yes. It was such a fabulous idea, and I've really enjoyed my service there and the camaraderie, but being able to expand my knowledge of all the different nonprofits that we have in the community. And what we do on the finance committee is we just look at the financial health of the grant recipient or the potential recipient, and is this a sustainable budget? You know, what they want to use the money for, is it going to work for that? So that's sort of what my committee does. And I love all the women on the committee that I work on.
Oh, my gosh. I honestly get so excited in talking about this and hearing about this. So this has really expanded your horizons, Heidi, in terms of the community, the people, as well as the gifting and or the work that can be done through these organizations that you're gifting to.
It certainly has. And something that Impact does, and Lindsay's been on these as well, is after we give the grant, maybe a year or two later, we actually go back and revisit those grant recipients, and we get to see the difference. So one of the first ones we did was Inland Seas, and I went to look at the ship that we refitted so it could be used by those educational groups. And it's really gratifying to see the difference that our grants can make.
And there's real accountability for these organizations. This is not an easy process that you take them through. It's work and that they have to release in essence, all of their financials to you as that group to make certain that you're, you know, you approve them as a grantee of the group.
Right. And we want to be good stewards of what people have entrusted to us and make sure that that money is used for the benefit.
I love it. Now, I was thinking too, honestly, Lindsay, I think a tremendous number of women in leadership have joined Impact 100. But tell us about the future and what it is you're trying to achieve now, this next step.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking. This year we had 348 members join, which is just incredible. We have continued to grow our membership every year, which just continues to substantiate the heart of the women in our community. And I'm so grateful for those women who continue to renew. We this year have decided to make our goal to become truly transformational and award 4 grants in 2025. We want to hit 400 members. But that's not all. When we announced this goal, excuse me, I'm getting so choked up on it. When we announced this goal, we had an anonymous donor who I want to call an angel donor because it's truly someone who is looking out for our chapter. This anonymous donor said, hey, I really want Impact to give 5 grants in 2025. And so here's our challenge. If we hit 400 members by our April 1st deadline, this angel donor is giving $100,000 to our grant pool so that we can take that number not only from 4 but to 5 grants and fund a grant in every focus area this coming year. And so I'm just truly touched by that generosity, especially in a time like now when it's very easy to conserve. It's very instinctual to pull back.
Sure.
But the women in our community regularly and continually step up. We reach out. We support those neighbors in need. And I'm so proud to be a part of an organization who really makes that the heart of its mission.
So you're welcoming new members into the group, and you're hoping to get a total of 400 by April 1st of 25. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And the sooner we can get our evergreen members, which are the members who say, hey, I'm continually committed, I want to re-up every year, the sooner we can get all of them renewed, which our challenge is to have them renew by the end of this year, we can truly focus on expanding our impact. And just because, Dennis, you're a man doesn't mean you can't support Impact. If we have any male listeners out there who want to support women in our community and support these nonprofits, you can sponsor a woman. You can give to our Share the Love Fund, which allows us to include women who may not be able to make that full commitment of $1,000. We really encourage businesses to think about supporting some fabulous women employees who want a chance to give back, to be leaders in our community. There's a lot of ways for people to give back to Impact and help us reach that goal of 400.
Yeah, Prout Financial has done that since 2017. Mm-hmm. And honestly, then I'm thinking, what other woman in leadership within our staff would, because we support both Deanne and Heidi.
And we're so grateful for that, Dennis.
Yeah, hey, you're welcome. So that is a great challenge. What women in your organization would you want to be a part of this group? Obviously, that helps them expand their horizons, as we've said, but also to learn leadership form and tactics and meet some incredible people. I've got to imagine that you've made some great friendships or some great friends in the group.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I first moved here, I had just had my second child. I was consumed by everything that was building my business and all that. And so it's very easy to become isolated. And when I joined, it was a way to interact with women of all generations. I mean, women that I normally would never have had a chance to meet. We come because of our hearts are committed to this cause. But I've left with people that have become some of my closest friends. So I'm very grateful for it. We do a lot of good work, but it's also good fun too.
That's awesome.
Yes, indeed.
Love hearing it. So your work continues, hoping to gather 400 volunteers to continue the cause of Impact 100. And Lindsay, you're an excellent representative of the group, and it's really a pleasure to have you join us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank
so
you
much.
For taking the time. Part of the DAR law firm, DAR. What does that stand for again, if you would?
No, that was named after our founding attorneys, Courtney Danbrook, Janice Adams, and myself. And Janice Adams recently retired last year, and so now we're doing business as DAR Law and hope you continue to support us, community. We thank you so much.
You bet.
Hey, what's the status of the grantees right now? Did you just announce the winners, or is that coming up?
We certainly did. We just had our annual meeting and we announced three winners. We had Northwestern Michigan College Foundation. We had the Thompsonville Area Revitalization Project and the Friendship Community Center. So each of them received $116,000. We just did that and it was a magical night. And we're moving forward with getting them the grant agreements and dispersing funds. And they're going to move, hit the ground hard, right? Hit the ground running. So.
That's incredible. I was thinking of all the charitable organizations and or foundations within the Traverse community or the Northern Michigan area. You guys have got to be one of the top in terms of giving to local charitable organizations. The numbers are just phenomenal. So, man, exciting. Thank you again for joining us, Lindsay. So here's what happens to markets when interest rates fall in charts. And Heidi's covering this article from the Wall Street Journal. September 23rd. So most people would say, well, that's about a week ago. Relatively new information that people are trying to deign, if you will. What the heck is going to be happening with the stock market and interest rates now that the Fed has chimed in on cutting rates? So Heidi, cover that for us, if you would.
Yeah. So like Dennis said, this is an article from the Wall Street Journal, and it's written by Sam Goldfarb. And what they talk about is a little over a week ago, the Federal Reserve, or we call it the Fed, raised lowered interest rates. So investors are now looking around and saying, okay, what's next? And since the 1980s, investments such as stocks and corporate bonds have tended to perform well in the 12 months after the Fed begins to cut rates. Of course, that all depends on how the economy fares. It's all about the economy, Dennis.
It is indeed. I think it's a political statement we've heard before, Ron. Would that be accurate? Indeed.
So when growth holds up or gets boosted by rate cuts, corporate profits tend to be strong. But if the cuts aren't enough to stave off, as I turn the page, sorry, a recession, investments of all kinds tend to suffer sharp declines. You may remember some things that don't follow the pattern. We had the dot-com bubble way back in the early 2000s, and we also had the recession 2008-2009.
Yeah.
And those are examples.
Well, the 2008 global financial crisis was a crisis because the stock market lost about 50% of its value. So that is a little bit of an exclamation point.
All right. So now let's talk about the 10-year Treasury note. You hear a lot of talk out there in the news and on the business news stations about the 10-year Treasury note. And you may wonder, why do we talk about that? Well, the yield on the 10-year Treasury note is a benchmark for mortgage rates and other borrowing costs across the economy. This has historically climbed moderately while the Fed is cutting rates. While that might seem counterintuitive, the 10-year yield reflects investors' expectation where rates will be in the future. So this is something that people watch to predict what might happen. And so that's why people are interested in it. If the economy is doing well, the Fed might not have to cut as much as investors expected. But there are some notable exceptions. Before the 2008 financial crisis, investors had anticipated a typical modest reduction in interest rates, but the Fed had to cut rates to zero once the economy crashed. So that was unexpected.
It's interesting to note that the rate has gone up in about the last a little over 2 weeks from 2.0. What was the rate? I wrote it down, but oh yeah, it goes 3.6 to 3.8%. So they've actually started to come up a little bit, an intermediate term amount, if you will. Treasury notes are ways that the government funds its operations, but there is certainly an intermediate term. Anything from T-bills, which can go up to 1 year, notes go up to 10. Now the bonds go all the way up to 30 years in length.
Correct. Okay? Okay, so let's talk about stocks. Typically, the start of a rate-cutting cycle marks a period of uncertainty for companies and investors. As time goes on, it usually becomes clearer whether the economy is going to enter a recession or not. That helps explain why the S&P 500 index has historically performed well in a rate cutting cycle. Many small companies get an extra benefit because they tend to have more floating rate debt than their larger peers. They don't have the cash reserves, say, of a larger company. So they're more dependent on debt to finance some of their operations.
Sure. So if their costs have come down, it's going to tend to be better for the company. They're going to tend to make or tend to have an ability to make more profits, if you will.
Right. And as a result, the Russell 2000 index of small and medium-sized businesses has often outperformed the S&P after the Fed starts cutting rates.
2000 companies that they simply follow as a gauge to tell how those particular companies are doing and use that as an index, the Russell 2000. All right. Thank you very much, Ron. He's got it right up on their screen for us so we can see.
He's showing us five charts down somewhat.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to bonds, the bond spread. Treasury yields aren't the only factor that sets businesses' borrowing costs. Interest rates on corporate bonds are also determined by a risk premium or spread. That compensates investors for the possibility that a company will default. That spread has often narrowed when the Fed cuts rates, which is consistent with a healthy economy and has helped to offset the uptick in Treasury yields.
Yeah, so, I was thinking, I'm going to insert there. Now, unless you're Berkshire Hathaway, which owns more, they've bought more Treasury bill debt. I think they've got more T-bills than the federal government itself. They've got that much. So they don't have to pay a spread because they're basically as safe as the federal government and their finances.
Some people might say safer.
Yeah, some people might say that too.
Some people. Yeah. So let's move on to the U.S. dollar, shall we? The U.S. dollar tends to weaken in a rate-cutting cycle.
Okay, one moment. Why would people care about that? Why would they care if the dollar is weakening?
Well, one reason would be we are an international economy. Mm-hmm. And how our dollar stacks up to other currencies can make a difference in how much you purchase, how much you sell for, and other ramifications.
It can also mean inflation. So if our dollar is worth less, we're paying more for goods and services, eggs, cheese, meat, the rest of it. Okay. So if our dollar is falling because they've been too alleviating, if you will, in that interest rate, then it means we've got too much money chasing too few goods. That's called inflation.
Mm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the U.S. dollar tends to weaken in rate-cutting cycles because it becomes less attractive to foreign investors who are choosing between different currencies. They are typically seeking the highest returns on ultra-safe investments, which tend to closely track the benchmark rates set by central banks. That doesn't always happen, however, because currencies can swing with the world events as well. The dollar moved higher in 2001 because of a variety of factors, including investors seeking safety in the dollar after the September 11th attacks.
Somebody said, I would like to get started with a Roth IRA. Too bad Ed Slott's not on this week.
I know.
I'd like to get started with a...
He'd get so excited about
he
that
would.
Question.
How do I get started with a Roth IRA? What are the steps?
Well, the steps are, first, I would say, check your... If you're still working, which you need to be to start new money with a Roth IRA, you need to have earned income. You can either do that many times through your 401k at work or individually. If you want to add to something monthly, I'm guessing that's what you're saying. Many mutual funds are available to add to on a monthly basis as a Roth. Now, you can't deduct the funds that are going in, but there are also some other things to know. There are contribution limits, too. For Roth IRA, first of all, if you're over 50, you can put up to $7,000. Excuse me, it's $8,000 now. Mm-hmm. This is 2024.
Yes.
$8,000 a year into a Roth IRA account. Now, there's no income limitation if you're putting into a 401k Roth, but there is if it's a Roth IRA. Now, the limitations for married filing jointly, if you're part of a company retirement plan, is between the incomes of $123,000 and $143,000. So it's a $20,000 window there where you can contribute to a Roth IRA. So it depends on what you've got available to you. It depends on your income. Now, if you're not part of a retirement plan or don't have one available, there is no income limitation. You can have any income. Is that right, though?
There's no income limitation for contributing to your 401k. So if you have a Roth option within that 401k, you don't have to worry about how much you make. You can put in whatever.
Right, yeah, right. I just wanted, I had that catch there in my mind. If your spouse is covered by, if you're married, obviously, your spouse is covered by a retirement plan, the phase-out range is $218,000 to $228,000. $228,000. But if you neither of you have access to a retirement plan, it doesn't matter your income. So you can still fund a Roth IRA.
If you do not have, if you're not currently earning income for whatever reason, but you have money to put in a Roth IRA, you can open one up, right?
You can convert your IRA to a Roth. You have to have earned income to put new money into a Roth, or contribution money, we'll call it. If you want to make a Roth conversion, take money from your IRA and convert it to a Roth. See, there are, what, five ways to fund a Roth IRA that we're talking about. That's part of the equation. Which is the best way to fund it? There are lots of ways to do that. Virtually all of them are open one way or another to get money into a Roth.
If you're working and you have a 401k, you want to go check with the administrator and say, hey, do you have a Roth 401k that I can put
is
my money
into?
Is
there a Roth option within the 401k?
Roth option, all right.
Roth option.
If there's not.
If there's not, ask them if they can add that to the plan. Ask them to expand their language. You know what we're talking about?
Okay.
Expand the language.
But you can't go out separately, go down to a bank or down to Dennis Prout and open one up?
As long as you're under those income limits. Then you can open one outside of your 401k as well.
Which you would do where?
You can go to a bank. You can go to a mutual fund company online. You can go to any kind of broker-dealer online. And it's as simple as writing the check to that institution, that custodian, and they can deposit it for you. One little tip I always tell my clients is in that memo line, I always put the tax year that I'm making the contribution for. So if you ever have to go back and, like, figure something out, you have that documented. But it's a great thing to get started. You don't have to put in that full $8,000 or $7,000 in. You can start with just a couple $100 and build on that over time.
By the way, our texter just added on and said they are self-employed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you've got several other kinds of retirement plans that you could be a part of. Because you're self-employed, thank you for adding that. You may want to consider that on top of the Roth option. If you have a simple IRA, the Roth simple is going to be added to most plans here. It should be by 2025. They're still getting caught up with the language on those because IRS is allowing it. It's just that the administrators haven't caught up in getting that incorporated into their language.
Okay. So a self-employed person can have an employer plan of their own.
But they don't need to, right?
They don't need to.
Okay.
But they can. And one of the benefits to having an employer plan, even if you're just a one-person shop, is the contribution limits are larger for employer plans. So like on the simple, if you are under 50, you can put in to $16,000. And if you're over 50, you can put in up to $19,500. So you can see that's more than double of what you can put in just individually.
Talk about being able to leverage what you can give. And then secondly, there are so many ifs, ands, or buts. If if you're a client of ours, obviously you can open and or add to Roth accounts per what your current situation is and advice from us, which we'd love to help you with.
We had another question,
yes.
Kind of speculation here. Do you think the 30-year mortgage rate will drop? And if so, how low?
Well, how low? Now, what is what are current 30-year mortgages at right now? Is there an average run up there?
6.96 for a fixed.
Okay, 6.96. Now, that's probably...
That's Michigan.
That's the low credit score. Up the credit score there, if you would, Ron, to about, let's take it about 760 or so. Let's see where that rate is. Yeah, it's about 6.5. So somewhere between 6.5 and 6.9 is probably safe. And I would say they're going to continue to decline. So that's a great part of mortgage money, I think, is going to continue to get cheaper for those who are interested in buying a home. So save your pennies. Let's make the most of it. So Deanne, stats, let's hit that, shall we?
Absolutely. So interestingly enough, my first stat is what Dennis and Heidi were kind to alluding to in the previous article regarding Treasury yield. Following the U.S. Federal Reserve's 50 base point rate cut last week, the 10-year Treasury yield increased from 3.65% on September 17th to 3.73% on September 24th. In the 8 prior rate cut cycles since 1984, the only two times the 10-year yield rose in the week after the first cut were in January 2001 and September 2007, and that source is Bespoke. And Dennis, as I'm reading the stat, like immediately I say 2001 and I see 2007. Those aren't great years.
No, those the market had significant declines in both of those cycles. As we've alluded to in 07, well, 2001, 2000, 2001, 2002, those were very, very
that
difficult
times.
That
was the dot-com thing.
The whole dot-com bust, if you will.
September 11th, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's another stat for cash-conscious millennials. We've had several texts from younger listeners, and we really appreciate those listening in. So, according to the Fed's latest report on household wealth, the sub-40 age has 20.2% of financial assets in deposits and money market funds, which is higher than for those ages 40 to 54, which is 15%, 55 to 69, 12%, and even 70 plus who keep just 16.2% in cash. And that source is U.S. Federal Reserve.
Hmm. My thought on that is as the wealth grows, they see lesser need to hold that much in cash as a percentage of their net wealth or net worth. You bet.
That makes sense.
Millennials are 28 to 43 years old.
Oh, thank you, Ron. Mm-hmm. Yes. Whether retiring early or late, single women are more likely to come up short on retirement funding compared to couples and single men, roughly 10 to 15% more likely to not have saved enough for retirement, and that source is Investment News. And I know Heidi has a lot to say on this topic, so take it away.
Yeah, I'm pretty passionate about educating women on their financial health. We started a group at Prout Financial Design, and we call it Flourish. And this is something I do on an annual basis. And I like to talk on different financial topics because women need to know these things. Mm-hmm. Because as Dennis relates a lot of times on our show, that we are becoming more responsible for our own retirement. Pensions are becoming more and more rare. So we need to take on that responsibility for our own financial health, not mm-hmm. just today, but you have to put in your budget something
exactly.
to work towards the future so that you're able to retire and live well during
and
that
Heidi,
period.
And Heidi, I love how you challenged. I've heard you challenge so many women. It's like something, anything. Start with $100. Like
exactly.
nothing's too small to start putting that away.
And the hardest thing is just to get started. If you just get started and let time work in your favor, over time you can build something up. And anything you do now will benefit you in the future.
So empowering women to their own financial well-being, mm-hmm. a great thing, I think. So my information, we do have time for it after all. There is some concern, as you might have gleaned from some of the stats that we were talking about, with falling interest rates. So my information from an article from Ed Yardini and Eric Wallerstein of September 18th of this year, the economy didn't need, they say, to be stimulated so much. It seems that the Fed is getting their soft landing, but now it feels a need to act fast to avert a hard landing. Consider the following. Jobless claims. The labor market is already seeing fewer layoffs, and weekly unemployment claims fell 11,000 in the week ended September to 219,000, the lowest level since May. They're simply saying that things are slowing down, and for the Fed to pile on too much, they're concerned about that. Business surveys. September, Philly's Fed PMI jumped back into positive territory this morning. That followed a spike in the New York Fed's PMI earlier this week. So that simply means that the power in the economy is continuing to wane somewhat. The Economic Indicators Conference Board Coincident Economic Index for the U.S. increased to 0.3% in August to a new record high. Payroll, employment, personal income, less transfer payments, manufacturing and trade sales, other notes or stats are included in the data used to determine recessions. They all rose in August. So these are simply indicating that the economy is not showing a tremendous amount of weakness. It's kind of leveling here. And so they're just concerned. The bond yield, the 10-year Treasury yield is up 13 basis points or 0.13% in regular man's language or woman's language, if you will, from its Tuesday closing level to 3.75% today. Well, now it's 3.8, as we mentioned. While Treasury inflation protection yields are edging higher, nominal Treasury yields are climbing even more. So it just is saying they're concerned that we're fueling too much into this economy.
So, Dennis, is it sort of like a recipe where if you put too little in or too much in, it sort of spoils it, and there's just a certain bandwidth which is just right.
Yes, and you know, everyone, there is certainly some hand wringing that goes along with this. I get that. It's just important in your own portfolio to understand there are some rather significant pressures on not only interest rates, believe it or not, but the amount of money in supply. Started and continued by the federal government in its own spending largesse is causing this inflation undertow that's really difficult to circumvent or get around. And it's going to be a continuing issue. And Ron brought that up so perfectly in terms of timing, because gold is an indicator not only of uncertainty, but also a weakening currency that we have. So you, in terms of diversification, it's still incredibly important to diversify your portfolio, to understand the impact of inflation, and it will continue to have an impact on you. It's interesting to note, while the prices of goods and services have risen and it's tended to level off, those prices have not gone back down for the most part. Now, gas has declined somewhat, I get that, fuel. But most of these other goods and services that we're purchasing have tended to remain relatively strong in price. So these prices are pretty much staying up there, and it's causing spending headaches for a lot of folks who are trying to live week to week and month to month on what they're earning. And that it is an inflation cycle that's not fun to try to navigate at this point. So it remains with us. Invest accordingly, knowing that diversification and having assets that participate with this can be very helpful to you in the long term.
Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Deanne Jennings, thank you all once again.